Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is a special edition of The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. We begin with the president describing an uphill climb for his second administration.
We must act, knowing that today's victories will be only partial, and that it will be up to those who stand here in 4 years, and 40 years, and 400 years hence, to advance the timeless spirit once conferred to us in a spare Philadelphia hall.
President Barack Obama, in his second inaugural address, calling every American to take an oath of service similar to the one he swore once again today before Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts.
Please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Barack Hussein Obama, do solemnly swear.
I, Barack Hussein Obama, do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully execute.
That I will faithfully execute.
The office of President of the United States.
It was a day full of history on the Mall in Washington. We want to give you a sense of that history this hour, full of the mystic chords of memory invoked by Lincoln when he took office more than 150 years ago. The history of this day, Martin Luther King Day, and President Obama chose Merle Evers Williams, the widow of civil rights activist, some would say martyr, Medgar Evers, to deliver his invocation.
150 years after the Emancipation Proclamation and 50 years after the March on Washington, we celebrate the spirit of our ancestors, which has allowed us to move from a nation of unborn hopes and a history of disenfranchised votes to today's expression of a more perfect union.
President Obama began with history in his remarks, and we want to spend the next few minutes giving you a sense of his inaugural speech. The story of America, the president said, is a story of freedom and some of its pitfalls, government and some of its shortcomings.
Together we discovered that a free market only thrives when there are rules to ensure competition and fair play. Together, we resolve that a great nation must care for the vulnerable and protect its people from life's worst hazards and misfortune. Through it all, we have never relinquished our skepticism of central authority, nor have we succumbed to the fiction that all society's ills can be cured through government alone. Our celebration of initiative and enterprise, our insistence on hard work and personal responsibility, these are constants in our character. But we have always understood that when times change, so must we. That fidelity to our founding principles requires new responses to new challenges. That preserving our individual freedoms ultimately requires collective action.
In a very pragmatic 20-minute speech that was all about action, the president shouted out support for people who have demanded his attention and for whom he's promised reform.
Our journey is not complete until our gay brothers and sisters are treated like anyone else under the law. For if we are truly created equal, then surely the love we commit to one another must be equal as well. Our journey is not complete until no citizen is forced to wait for hours to exercise the right to vote. Our journey is not complete until we find a better way to welcome the striving, hopeful immigrants who still see America as a land of opportunity, until bright young students and engineers are enlisted in our workforce rather than expelled from our country. Our journey is not complete until all our children, from the streets of Detroit to the hills of Appalachia to the quiet lanes of Newtown, know that they are cared for and cherished and always safe from harm.
President Obama also boldly embraced the reality and urgency of a deteriorating global environment.
We will respond to the threat of climate change, knowing that the failure to do so would betray our children and future generations. Some may still deny the overwhelming judgment of science, but none can avoid the devastating impact of raging fires and crippling drought, and more powerful storms. The path towards sustainable energy sources will be long and sometimes difficult. But America cannot resist this transition. We must lead it.
And the president spoke boldly and directly to his enemies on Capitol Hill, who helped to limit the accomplishments of his first term, people he will need to rely on in the next 4 years.
Being true to our founding documents does not require us to agree on every contour of life. It does not mean we all define liberty in exactly the same way or follow the same precise path to happiness. Progress does not compel us to settle centuries-long debates about the role of government for all time, but it does require us to act in our time. For now, decisions are upon us, and we cannot afford delay. We cannot mistake absolutism for principle or substitute spectacle for politics, or treat name-calling as reasoned debate. We must act.
Tough, prosaic pragmatism from President Obama. Very little poetry in his second inaugural. For some reaction now, we go to Takeaway Washington correspondent Todd Zwillick. Welcome, Todd.
Hi, John.
Also on the line from Washington is Dick Stevenson, brand new chief Washington correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. Dick, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
So, Todd, let's begin. Was the audience there on the Mall prepared for pragmatism and really a pretty rousing policy speech?
Well, what they got, John, was an ideological speech, and in some ways surprisingly so. It pays to keep in mind that this was a speech, of course, from a reelected president, but from a relatively popular president, cresting in his popularity, having just vanquished the Republicans in the election, even took some swipes at his former opponents. You heard one line in the speech there, John, where President Obama said that people on Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security aren't takers, that these programs allow Americans the freedom to take risks. Well, he was really talking in a way to former vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan, who had referred to a nation of takers in a speech some years ago. It got reinvoked in the election campaign. It really was an ideological speech, mentioning those programs directly, mentioning climate change directly, obliquely mentioning the safety of children. He did not mention gun control by name, but that's what he was talking about when he talked about the safety of children. And John, it was part scold. It was a very optimistic speech, it's true, but there was some scold in there too, and you played it towards the end of the speech. We cannot mistake absolutism for principle or substitute spectacle for politics. They were the words, I thought, of a president who, on behalf of the people, he's saying, you know, I've had enough of this, and maybe the voters have had enough of this. We'll see how the next 4 years and even the next couple of months play out on policy grounds. But there was some scold in there, too, amongst the ideology and lofty rhetoric.
Well, we'll see if former vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan got the message there from some of that scolding. It was certainly historic to see Paul Ryan, Jay-Z, and Beyonce in the same shot on C-SPAN at one point during the festivities. Dick Stevenson, I'm wondering if you would characterize this as a sort of end point, a cap on the end of the entire electoral phase here, or some sort of marching orders, a new beginning going forward.
Yeah, I think as Todd was suggesting, it's a pivot point. This is a president who now is not constrained by politics or reelection, who doesn't have the weight of those huge expectations anymore that accompanied his first inaugural 4 years ago, and who I think, you know, is beginning to hear even now, on I guess the second technical day of his second term, that ticking of the clock. There's not a lot of time for him to do everything that he wants to do. I thought it was very notable that he highlighted climate change. This was one of the big issues that he had run on 4 years ago. It didn't go very well for him in his first term, clearly signaling that he wants to do some big things this time around. So, you know, I think what he was saying is, I'm no longer the Barack Obama who promised 4 years ago an end to the petty grievances and false promises of politics. I'm a guy who has things that he wants to get done. I won the election, and now let's get them done.
The second term, and certainly Obama's electoral victory, doesn't necessarily apply to the ability of Democrats to get things through. The House is still controlled by the Republicans. You mentioned that this is the technical second day of the Obama second term. He took the oath of office yesterday. The oath he took today was simply symbolic. Do you think a lot of what he laid out here will end up being symbolic going forward?
I think that they have learned how to use the powers of the presidency a little bit more effectively. I think on issues like climate change, you'll see a lot of executive and regulatory action. They learned with immigration last year that they can have a huge impact by doing things without Congress. I think Obama feels less compelled to try to seek a middle ground as a beginning point for debates and will take what action he can to move things forward. But of course, they are, you know, obviously well aware of the fact that Capitol Hill is going to be something of an impediment. And, you know, to some degree, there is no way around the House of Representatives, although, you know, it should be said that, in the first big conflicts since he was reelected, Obama has done pretty well dealing with the House Republicans on the budget, most recently on the showdown over whether or not the House would go along with raising the debt limit.
That's Dick Stevenson, brand new chief Washington correspondent for our partner, the New York Times. And you alluded to that as well, takeaway Washington correspondent Todd Zwillick. I guess since you're so good at optics, Todd, looking at the visuals today, was this a celebration of just the people who won, the Obama folks, or did you get a sense that this was a nation coming together? Certainly there was a diversity there on the stage around Barack Obama in political terms, not so much on the Mall.
Maybe not so much. You know, John, my own optics, just as an aside, because I can't resist. I looked to my right, there was Katy Perry. I looked to my left, there was home run king Hank Aaron. How's that for optics?
Where were you sitting?
Third row, my friend.
Nice.
We had a good seat.
Nice.
Katy Perry wasn't next to me. She was actually a couple
rows
back.
Did you introduce Hank Aaron to Katy Perry?
Of course not.
Well, why
of course not?
Not. You should have.
Well, you know.
All right, get to the big point here.
Well, John, maybe not as diverse a crowd, not as large a crowd. Look, let's just get down to it. 1.2 million people last time in 2008 when Barack Obama was inaugurated for the first time. Maybe 600,000 this time, half the crowd. Some of the newness, some of the novelty, and maybe some of the enthusiasm is gone. And part of what you heard in the speech was a little more grit, some more determination, and I think a lot more realism, as was described from the president. And on the dais, John, not as much diversity either. Former Presidents George H.W. Bush nor former President George W. Bush, neither of them on the dais. The senior with health problems, the latter chose not to come. All of the other living presidents were there.
Todd Zwillick, takeaway Washington correspondent, and Dick Stevenson, chief Washington correspondent for our partner, the New York Times. Thanks so much.
Pleasure.
Thank you.